Thanks be to God, and well done, Andy, I think, with those names. Brilliant. Good to be with you. If you've not met me before, I'm Sam. I am a member at St Mary's. I don't normally get to the 4 p.m, so it's nice to be with you now. Donate an Advent candle to musicians. Well, do keep your Bible open in Ruth chapter 4. As we start, there are two types of people in this world. And I'm sure both types will be present with us this afternoon. The first type has already started listening to Christmas music. The second type is people who are wrong. So it'd be good to know who's in the first category. There's a few of us. Brilliant. I'm glad not to be the only one. It is time to start being Christmassy. We just need a bit of cold weather, a bit more tinsel out. But I have to say, one of the things that has got me feeling Christmassy, and I started listening to Christmas music on Friday, is studying Ruth chapter 4, because it is all about Christmas. It doesn't look like it is, but I hope by the end of our time looking at it just now, we will see that it is. And so reading through Ruth 4 and reflecting on it is the equivalent of sticking a log on the fire, putting on Nat King Cole, and just getting ready for Christmas. Now, part of that is because it's a lovely story, and it's a really nice ending to that lovely story. This could be the kind of movie we could be watching at home on a Sunday afternoon. It all wraps up nicely. It's a kind of Richard Curtis movie-type ending. But it's not just a story to kind of warm our hearts. It's meant to nourish our souls. Because the story of Ruth and Naomi actually becomes our story. That's not just a happy ending for them, it's a happy ending for us. The whole thing really is about redemption. Now, redemption is a key word in the Old Testament. God's people had been slaves in Egypt. God had rescued them. He had redeemed them. And this became the main way people referred to God. He was the Redeemer. This is what he did. And in the laws that God gave the people in the Old Testament, it was very clear that he wanted them to be redeemers too. So if someone was destitute, a close relative could buy your land so that you could keep it. If you were a childless widow, a close relative could marry you so that you could have a family line. And both were acts of redemption. They were a way of making sure you had a place and an inheritance in God's people. And it's that kind of redemption that has been brewing in the book of Ruth. Just to remind us what's been happening. Naomi and her daughter-in-law Ruth are both widows. They've returned to Bethlehem, and they are destitute and childless. In chapter 2, Ruth went off to find some food and happened to end up in the field of a guy called Boaz, who's not only a good man in a time when good men were rare, he happens to be a close relative of Naomi. In other words, we're thinking he could redeem. He could be a redeemer. And it's a wonderful moment. It's a kind of like a Casablanca moment of all the fields and all the farms and all the land. Ruth turns up in this one. And so this man has an opportunity to redeem Ruth and Naomi, to help them to have a family line, to give them a place and an inheritance. So Ruth lets it be known in a slightly peculiar way in chapter 3 that she would be happy to marry him. And Boaz says to her, in effect, yes, but. He says, yes, I'd be chuffed to bits to marry someone like you. But, he told us at the end of the last chapter, there is another person who is an even closer relative. And it's their call. They kind of have first dibs on being a redeemer. And so we were kind of left on a bit of a cliffhanger. And so in chapter 4, we now find out what happens next. And having been waiting so long for a redeemer, it turns out they're a bit like buses. Because you wait for ages, and then in chapter 4, we have three redeemers turning up. Three different people in Ruth chapter 4 are spoken of as redeemers. So we're just going to look at each one and see what we can learn from them. So let's think about the first redeemer. We begin with this suspense. Boaz is as good as his word. He heads to the town gates to find out if this other guy's around and if he's interested in being a redeemer. The town gate was where all the kind of business would have been done in a place like that. And so when he finds this other guy in verse 1, he says to him, come over here and let's have a chat about this. And he explains this situation to this man. He does everything by the book. He makes sure there are elders and witnesses around, so it's all kind of official. It's all above board. And he explains the situation to this guy in verse 3. He says to him, listen, there's someone called Naomi. You're related to her. She's now back, and she needs to sell her land in order to survive. And so you can be the redeemer here. You can buy the land. You can have it and keep it in her name for as long as she is alive. You get first dibs. And so at the end of verse 4, this guy says, yes, okay, I'll redeem it. I'll step up. I'll do my family duty. I will be the redeemer. And for him, it's a great deal. He gets to buy a field, and yet he can actually keep it in the family because he's thinking, Naomi's quite old now. She's not likely to have a kid, and therefore I can just actually keep this land for myself. So I'm doing a big act of redemption, but it's not actually going to cost me anything. It's quite a good deal. So he says yes, and we reading along say no. No, we don't want him. We want Boaz. Boaz is the one we like. He's a good man. He's a godly man. We don't know this guy. All we know is he's not Boaz. Well, Boaz, it turns out, knows exactly what he's doing, because in verse 5, he then explains a bit more and says, that's great, you're going to redeem the land. Just to let you know, it's kind of part of a package deal. You don't just get the land, you get Naomi and you get Ruth. And so it's not just the land you've got to redeem, it's these two as well. Well, that changes everything. If it was just the land, as I said, it would have been a good deal. He can just wait for Naomi to get old, eventually pass on, and then he can just keep the land and do with it what he wants. But now it involves looking after Naomi and Ruth. Well, A, there's the extra cost of looking after two extra people. But actually, there's the risk that actually Ruth is young. She might marry. She might have a child, in which case the land would have to go to her. And so all of a sudden, this is now costly to him. And so in verse 6, he starts backpedaling furiously and says, well, I can't do this because I might endanger my own estate. So, Boaz, you redeem it. I can't do this. I'm out of here. You know, I'd love to. But it's a tight year, it's a tricky time, I just can't manage it now. But what he's really saying is this, he's saying, listen, Ruth's not worth it. The land is, yes. Taking on Ruth, no. What a rat bag. You know, when kindness wasn't going to cost him anything, he was happy to be the guy. But now it's going to be costly. He's not up for it. Now, it's worth just pausing there, because the point of this, if you remember, is redeeming was their way of being like God. And yet he won't do it because it's going to cost him a bit. And it strikes me there's a danger for us that's very similar. If we have an opportunity to do something that is Christ-like, it's very tempting for us to think, well, let me just think, what's in this for me? What am I going to get out of it? And it may well be that we're willing to help, provided there's no sacrifice. And it strikes me too that actually the writer of this book pays this guy the ultimate insult in the Bible. He doesn't name him. In fact, he goes out of his way not to name him. You see, humanly, Ruth and Naomi are nobodies. They've got nothing. Whereas this guy, humanly, is a man of means. He's a somebody. But as far as God is concerned, Ruth and Naomi are the somebodies, and this man is the real nobody. Because he's not interested in giving of himself. Back in verse 1, he was introduced as the Redeemer, as the kinsman Redeemer. But he bottles it. He doesn't redeem anything. And so he's like the photo negative, if you remember what those were, of Jesus. And so the question is, which are we going to be? Going to be plenty of opportunities in this next month to be Christ-like to others. There's going to be a lot of opportunity to do for others the kind of thing Jesus has done for us. There's an opportunity to put ourselves out to help others, to take people in, to bless them, to show them kindness. Are we going to be like Jesus, or are we going to be like this man and think, no, it's a bit inconvenient? So that's the first redeemer, a kind of non-redeemer, the anti-redeemer. But we get to the second redeemer in what happens next. So this guy's now out of the way. The field is now open for Boaz. And we get this explained in a slightly odd way. So the guy has said to him, listen, you can redeem it. And the writer clearly thinks this is a slightly weird thing that is about to happen. So he explains it for us in verse 7. He says, now in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. The writer sounds a bit embarrassed. You know, we were a bit funny back in those days. You can imagine any time you went to the estate agent, you'd come home without a shoe. Hop around after doing business deals. Well, that's what Boaz has to do. So Boaz removes his shoe and it all becomes formal. So Boaz steps up and does this act of being willing to redeem. He declares his hand to everybody there. He's very public. He announces in verse 9 to all the people, everyone who's around, he says, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I've also acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses. So he's willing to do it. He's willing to redeem not just the land, but to marry Ruth and redeem her as well. They all respond with hurrah in verse 11. They acknowledge the fact that they are witnesses of this. And they pray. They pray for Ruth. They pray for Boaz. They pray for a future family that God might give them. So Boaz redeems. And in doing so, he provides us a wonderful little snapshot of what Jesus has come to do. So remember, Boaz can redeem because he's a relative. He's one of their kin. And he's willing to redeem because he's a good man. He's honorable. He's kind. He's a man of means, but he's still willing to sacrifice and to pay a price in order to redeem. And so it is with Jesus. And this is where we start getting Christmassy. Because for Jesus to redeem us, he had to become our kin. He had to become a close relative. And so at Christmas, we remember the fact that Jesus was willing to be born one of us, willing to live as one of us, He went to all of that length just so he could be a kinsman redeemer for us. He came to this world and did all of that so he could be a close relative to you. And like Boaz, Jesus was willing to pay a hefty price for your redemption. This other guy effectively said, Ruth, you're not worth it. Boaz says, you are. And Jesus says, you are. Paul writes this in 2 Corinthians. He says, though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that we through his poverty might become rich. Peter writes, for you know that it was not with perishable things, such as silver or gold, that you were redeemed from your empty way of life, but with the precious blood of Christ. Boaz was willing to sacrifice money to redeem. Jesus has sacrificed his very self. To Boaz, Ruth was a destitute outsider, yes, but one who was worth redeeming. And to Jesus, you are the very same thing. Whether you know it or not, whether you feel it or not, you are also a destitute outsider. And yet one who is worth the precious blood of Jesus to redeem you. Well, the passage could end there and it would still be a very happy ending. But it doesn't end there because there's one more redeemer that we need to meet. So Boaz and Ruth marry in verse 13. And we're told that they have a son. And the way the writer puts it makes it very clear God has done this. This is a gift from God. He's enabled her to conceive and she has a little baby boy. And then a number of slightly odd things start to happen. You see, Ruth becomes a mum, but all the women in the town say in verse 17, Naomi has had a son. Ruth does the hard work. She's the one who goes through all the labor. And Naomi is the one who gets all the congratulations cards. Now, when my brother had his first child, this was the first grandchild of my parents, we had a big family gathering so that all the relatives could come round and meet this new baby. And my mum took it on herself to be the one who would carry the baby around and introduce him to everyone. My brother did not get a look in. Yes, my brother was the parent, but he recognised sensibly that day that on that day it was my mother's baby. And that is even more the case with Naomi. Do you remember back in chapter 1, she'd returned to Bethlehem saying, God has brought me back empty. But now have a look at verse 16. She was empty, but God has filled her lap with this little lad. Next slightly odd thing that happens is that the women refer to this baby as a redeemer. Look at what they say to Naomi in verse 14. They say, praise be to the Lord who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. Now you hear that and you think they must be talking about Boaz. Boaz has come in, he saved the day through Boaz. She's now got this child. But speaking of this redeemer, listen to what they say. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. The Redeemer isn't Boaz, the Redeemer is the baby. There is a sense in which the baby has redeemed Naomi's fortunes. Through this baby, she now has an inheritance among God's people. God is the God who fills up the empty, who restores those who are broken, who puts the lonely into families. So there is a sense in which this baby is the Redeemer. But it's actually even more than that. Because the next weird thing to happen is in verse 17. After they say Naomi's had a son, get this, the women of the town name the child. We don't see Boaz and Ruth with a book of baby names kind of arguing over what to call them. No, it is the women of Bethlehem who name him Obed. And the reason for that is because he's not just there to redeem Naomi. Yes, he will in verse 15. He will renew her strength and sustain her in her old age. But also verse 14, may he become famous throughout Israel. And the reason is this. In this town of Bethlehem, a Redeemer has been born who will be for all the people. And the end of this chapter shows us how. We end with this little genealogy. Not a part of scripture we tend to get excited about unless you're looking for pretentious baby names. Have you met my children? Hezron and Aminadab. It's very Berkshire. But what the writer is doing is he's panning out from this family and showing how what's just happened fits into the wider purposes of God. Because this genealogy ends with David. We don't know who Salmon and Nashon are, but we know who David is. Now, back at the beginning of Ruth, we were told that these events all happened in the days of the judges. And if you know anything about the book of Judges, you will know that that was a horrific time to be around. If you read through the book of Judges, you realize it's not PG. It's 18. Really horrible things happened at that point. And as things get worse, the writer of the book of Judges inserts this refrain 4 or 5 times. I'll read you a couple of examples. This is from Judges 17, verse 6. As everything is going completely wrong, he just says, in those days Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. Chapter 18, in those days Israel had no king. Chapter 19, in those days Israel had no king. At the end of the book of Judges, he says, in those days Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. You see, the big problem is they don't have anyone to bring them under God's rule. And yet now we see that through this birth to this obscure, apparently nobody, God is going to provide a king. A king who himself points ahead to the greater king. Because this genealogy at the end of Ruth 4 makes a reappearance in Matthew 1, where it is extended all the way down to Jesus. And it's a reminder to us that, like Israel, we have suffered the absence of a king in our lives. By nature, we have said we will do what is right in our own eyes. And wonderfully, God has acted to meet our need. And because he has, because that king came, because that Redeemer entered this world, we now have a place among God's people and we have an inheritance. An inheritance that will never perish, spoil, or fade. Happy Christmas.